Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series, which we're recording on Friday, the 22nd of July. My name is James Henderson. I'm chairman of the gas programme at OIES and also director of energy transition research. And with me today, I've got Mahua Mukherjee, because we've had a number of requests in, actually, for a discussion about oil markets, and in particular, India's role in oil markets and its purchases of discounted Russian crude. So today's podcast is going to focus on that topic. We're going to start with a bit of an overview of the Indian oil sector and then move on to the more detailed discussion of the trading with Russia. So Mahua, you're very welcome to the podcast. I wonder if we can start with you giving us some context regarding the size of the overall crude oil import picture in India and what we should have in the back of our minds in order to understand some of the numbers that we'll be talking about later.
First, I'd say one figure to keep in mind is 5 million barrels per day of total crude oil imports, which come to India from a number of countries. These countries lately include Russia, of course. In June 2022, at its peak, Russia was sending around 900,000 barrels of oil a day to India. So India is the third largest oil consumer and oil importer in the world, and it depends on oil imports for 85% of its needs. So this is a huge driver of foreign exchange costs and potentially also domestic inflation. Let me put that figure of 5 million barrels a day into context as well. The US is the world's largest oil consumer with a demand of 20 million barrels per day. China is the second with 15.5 million, and then India with 5 million. The US is now largely self-sufficient and imports only token amounts. So China and India are the big oil importers. Iraq is currently the largest supplier to India, sending just under 1.2 million barrels of Basra crude daily, which most of India's refineries are best suited for. Before the developments of the past few months with Russia, India's other main suppliers in 2020 and 2021 have been Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Nigeria, and surprisingly also the US, which just started exporting oil in 2015 and started selling to India from around 2017 when Mr. Trump was in office.
Okay, that's interesting background. And just for a bit more context then, in terms of the purchases of this crude, is it the Indian government or is it the private sector that places orders for oil imports from these various suppliers you've mentioned?
Oh, I'm glad you asked this. It's a really important question. The answer is that each refinery, whether government-owned or privately owned, does its own procurement and tendering for its crude oil supplies. The state-owned refineries generally look for long-term contracts with suppliers, mainly from the Persian Gulf countries. They can buy in the spot market as well, of course. The privately owned and operated refineries are much more opportunistic due to their nimbler decision-making processes, and they buy from a variety of sources at the best prices. So oil imports are a commercial decision and not a geopolitical decision in India. The private sector and the public sector conduct their oil procurement separately, and decisions on which supplier to select are made at the refinery level.
Okay, so let's talk a bit more about those oil refineries in India then. Obviously, they buy imported crude oil and they then refine it. But do they sell the products entirely in the domestic market or do they look to export?
Great question. They're supposed to meet the needs of the domestic market first at local prices, which are regulated. And then they're free to export any surpluses at international market prices. Many of the exports of refined petroleum products go to other Asian countries, but India's petroleum export markets actually extend all the way to the US and Europe. And some of the export destinations, such as Singapore, the UAE, and the Netherlands, are actually transshipment points where local traders then send the petroleum or petrochemical products to final buyers that are unknown to the Indian refiners. At the moment, there's excess refining capacity in India. Surprisingly enough, for such a heavy importer of crude oil, at 85% of its needs, fully around a tenth of India's merchandise exports by value actually come from petroleum products. Usually, the state-owned refineries end up selling most of their product domestically. And when domestic demand is very high, they obviously don't have much left to export. But the private refineries are very keen on emphasizing exports because those margins are much higher. Foreign buyers obviously pay better for products such as petrol and diesel and lubricants and motor spirits and so on.
So perhaps we could talk a little bit more about those private refineries in India then. Why are they interested in this kind of operating environment that's basically dominated by the state-owned refiners and implicitly taking domestic fuel price cues from the government?
Sure. Let's talk about the two main private refineries and who they are. And incidentally, I should also mention that India is one of the only countries in the world that is currently set to double its oil refinery capacity by 2040. I mean, it's one of the few countries with an officially growing oil sector and a net zero target. It's also recently seen the entry of foreign investors like Shell and BP and Rosneft, so obviously it doesn't look all bad to people who want a piece of this market. Let me answer your question. Apart from the majority of oil refineries and retail outlets in India, which are operated by government-owned companies like Indian Oil, BPL, HPL, etc., there are also two very important private companies in the crude refining and petrochemicals business and in the downstream fuel retailing business in India. The first is Reliance Industries, which operates what is in fact the world's largest single-site complex refinery at a place called Jamnagar in the Indian state of Gujarat. It has a capacity of 1.4 million barrels per day. Part of Reliance Industries' Jamnagar complex is set up for exports of refined products, mainly petrol and diesel, and another part of the refinery's capacity is used for supplying fuel to the domestic market. Reliance also has its own network of retail outlets throughout the country, and in 2020 it formed a partnership with British Petroleum, BP. They jointly own a downstream company called Reliance BP Mobility Limited. It operates under the brand name GeoBP and offers multiple fuel choices, even including EV charging infrastructure. And the other private oil refinery, this is interesting, is called Nayara. It's also located in the same state of Gujarat in western India, in a place called Vadinar. It has its own port, own thermal power plant, and other facilities along with the refinery. This refinery originally belonged to an Indian company, and in 2017, it was sold to a Russian consortium, which spent nearly $13 billion to buy all the assets. The Russian consortium consists of Rosneft and two other parties, including the commodity trader Trafigura. Their investment in Nayara, to this day, remains the largest single foreign direct investment in India. But despite its Russian connections, Nayara was not previously importing crude oil from Russia prior to 2022 because of geographic uncompetitiveness of Urals crude compared to what is on offer from Middle Eastern suppliers.
Okay, so how have these two private refineries then responded to the offer of heavily discounted Urals crude appearing on the market from Russia from March 22 onwards?
Well, in recent months, while Reliance and Nayara have been busy snapping up very large volumes of discounted Russian oil, in fact, around 27% of what's on offer, there are indications that at the same time, their domestic fuel outlets have been allowed to run dry once in a while. This means that while they were certainly buying up large volumes of Russian oil and refining it, they were somehow not directing it for sale in the domestic Indian market. It's probably because they've been exporting the majority of their refined product in order to benefit from record high margins in international markets, particularly on diesel, by not selling it to their domestic customers who pay less and are therefore less profitable. So government-owned retail outlets for fuel had to actually pick up the slack when private retail fuel outlets ran dry, as domestic demand for fuel in India has been growing sharply at around 18% year-on-year in 2022. This high demand is primarily due to the surge in overall economic activity and post-pandemic higher transport demand as people get back to work and leisure travel resumes. There's also higher agricultural, mining, and construction sector demand for fuel. So the state-owned outlets were basically carrying all that load.
Okay, that's interesting. And any other reasons? I mean, you know, we've obviously had the recovery from the pandemic and the economic surge, which we've seen in many countries across the world. But are there any other reasons that explain the very high level of domestic fuel demand in India so soon after the pandemic?
Actually, yes, there was another very important and possibly less anticipated factor driving increased demand for domestic demand for fuel in the first half of 2022. And that was the record heat wave over much of northern India from March to May 2022. This heat wave happened to coincide with simultaneous coal shortages at most of the thermal power plants. Despite the government's best efforts to avoid electricity blackouts, some power cuts happened during the peak of the heat waves. That power shortage, in turn, led to much higher than usual demand for diesel, which was needed to run generators for air conditioning and refrigeration. Government-owned fuel retailers have had to meet a lot of this excess domestic demand, as I mentioned, and in some cases they've been incurring what's politely called under-recoveries or financial losses. In fact, at times they even had to import finished petroleum products at very high prices from the international markets, only to sell them at lower local prices at their retail petrol stations. This was done just to ensure that customers were not turned away and that there would be no panic or criticism of the government. It was a very inconvenient time for the state-owned companies when the private sector refiners decided to let their domestic retail pumps run dry as they were busy chasing exports. As a result, the private refiners were sending their empty-handed domestic customers to the already overburdened state-owned fuel outlets. How were these government-owned refiners managing? Well, they had initially tried to buy as many discounted Russian barrels as possible, starting in March 2022 through a tendering process. However, they also have contracts with other long-standing suppliers, mostly in the Middle East, on which they had to take scheduled deliveries that were, of course, not discounted. Their overall pooled costs of oil, Russian and non-Russian, were therefore higher than they would have been if they could have imported even more Russian crude entirely on the spot market. So while the availability of large volumes of discounted crude oil undoubtedly helped government-owned retail outlets to keep prices down, it's probably safe to say that the private refiners benefited even more. Private refiners were able to minimize the share of revenues they earned from the local control market, and they maximized their margins by buying seaborne crude at large discounts. So after refining, as I said, they could sell their refined products into the rising price environment faced by their overseas customers. One account mentions that margins on diesel at one point were as high as 71%, and on petrol they were 17%. Published reports also indicate that Reliance has chosen to defer by 6 months a planned maintenance shutdown that was originally scheduled for March 2022 at its Jamnagar refinery. The implication is that this decision to delay the maintenance shutdown was probably taken so as not to miss the lucrative opportunity to purchase these so-called homeless Russian barrels at attractive discounts and earn high margins on selling the finished products internationally. How did the government respond to this? Well, the government did introduce a short-lived windfall tax on both state-owned and private refineries. This was on the 1st of July, 2022. After 3 weeks, the tax was reduced and the export levy on petroleum was removed, but the message had been received loud and clear. Neglecting domestic demand was not viewed favorably. Also, the oil prices have come down from their peak, so the windfall profit is not as high as before, and the windfall tax could also be lowered. So everyone had a face-saving climb down. This just happened in the last 2 days.
Okay, great. Well, that's really interesting to understand the kind of economics of the situation and the difference between the state and the private refiners and how they reacted. I mean, from what you're saying, it seems the private refiners are doing just fine and making some very nice margins. But so what was the Indian government's overall reaction when oil prices first jumped in March 2022? I mean, because as you've said on a number of times, and we all know, the Indian government has always been very concerned about inflation from high imported energy prices. So what was the reaction after March 22?
That's very interesting because the Indian government budget underlies, you know, the economic performance, was formally presented to Parliament only 3 weeks before the invasion of Ukraine. it had factored in an already elevated average oil price of $70 to $75 per barrel. And this was done conservatively because a $60 to $64 average cost per barrel is the comfortable oil price range in India for managing macroeconomic indicators, including foreign exchange reserves. So, but within a month of the budget presentation to Parliament, as we know, oil prices had shot up to over $100 and later $120 a barrel. Use of the domestic retail oil price as a domestic policy lever and a variable source of tax collection from consumers works well when the actual cost of procuring the oil is very low. But when oil prices rise, it totally limits the government's room for maneuver because there's no more headroom to pass on the full cost increases without unleashing inflationary pressures. And of course, there's affordability in a country like India. So for these reasons, the Indian government was already unhappy. This is before the invasion of Ukraine, was already unhappy in late 2021 with the deliberate strategy of OPEC production cutbacks and the pursuit of price rises. So India was wondering aloud in international fora about how to start diversifying its sources of supply. At that time, however, Russia was only the 9th or 10th largest supplier to India. This was mainly because of the physical distance from Russian ports to Indian refineries and the resultant high freight charges, which made Russian oil supplies commercially unviable. You asked about the reaction of the Indian government when oil prices jumped further in March 2022. Obviously, the initial reaction was dismay because those prices were not going to be passed on to the end consumer and the government would have to absorb the losses through state oil companies and their under-recoveries. There was also going to be a drain on foreign exchange, but then suddenly there were the so-called homeless barrels on offer at a $30 to $40 discount from Russia that brought oil prices exactly back to the figures that corresponded to the calculations in the government's budget. This offered a large measure of relief to the government in terms of its macroeconomic management. But as we've said, the government doesn't make the crude oil procurement decisions. But nevertheless, the Indian government must have been quite happy to see plenty of discounted barrels available in the market.
Okay, I mean, obviously, purchasing these barrels has some implications for international relations because of the sanctions being imposed by a number of Western countries on Russia. So what are the Indian government and the other authorities saying in terms of the reasons for their disregard of Western sanctions on Russia? Have they got any regrets?
They're saying a few different things, but no regrets. First, they say that Russian revenues from Europeans' oil and gas imports still remain much higher today, even after all the disavowals of purchasing Russian product. European payments are far higher than the Russian revenues that are earned from selling crude oil to India. So the first point is that India's purchases are too small to matter, whereas Europeans have actually provided over 60% of the revenues earned by Russia in the first 100 days of the war. The finance minister, I have quotes from two ministers. The finance minister has also said that she needs her oil sector to pick up discounted barrels of oil wherever globally available, given her need to manage COVID recovery and inflationary pressures. And interestingly enough, she also said something which the Biden administration repeated. If India and China were chasing the same limited global supplies of non-Russian oil at the moment, the prices per barrel would rise by a further $8 to $15, and everyone would be worse off. So the US has also made it clear, probably for that reason, that there's no threat of sanctions on India, although it repeats every once in a while that India should not be buying Russian oil. But energy security is something that the finance minister keeps mentioning. And the foreign minister explicitly noted in much sharper comments that Western countries have already taken away two important sources of oil for India, meaning Iran and Venezuela, and that's enough. India needs to look out for its energy security interests, he says, just as everyone else does. There's a little bit of a backstory here, which is in their minds, which I should probably just mention briefly. The perception is that the Indian economy was badly hurt in 2018 by going along with the U.S. sanctions on Iran. And because of the, you know, halting of imports of Iranian oil under pressure and sanctions threats from the Trump administration. And what hurt the Indian government the most was to see China not going along with the Iran sanctions announced by the U.S. So China continued to import Iranian oil, and yet it faced absolutely no consequences internationally from anywhere. So compliance with the U.S. sanctions on Iran has always been seen as a grave error, in hindsight, by India. And this view is further intensified because India and Iran had close economic links, and India has invested in the construction of a seaport in southeastern Iran. That's an $8 billion overseas investment of India's, which is now languishing. So India is poised to resume Iranian oil imports as soon as sanctions are lifted, and all the documents and term sheets are said to be ready on both sides. But this business of listening to Western sanctions was seen as a mistake. And then, to compound it, in a bizarre turn of events, as soon as India stopped the oil imports from Iran in May 2019, when its 12-month waiver expired, the same thing happened with Venezuela. The U.S. was trying to oust Nicolas Maduro and announced that Venezuelan oil was under sanctions, meaning once again the threat of secondary sanctions on those who touched it. So that was in 2019. And to compound things further, Indians were left shaking their heads in mid-March of 2022 when the Biden administration announced without ceremony that it was exploring the removal of curbs on Iranian and Venezuelan oil imports to the world just to boost global non-Russian oil supplies overnight. That was in mid-March. So I hope I've been able to give you a bit of an insight into why there's not an ounce of regret that I can detect among Indian government officials or the Indian public as the country proceeds with pursuing its own energy security.
No, it's a fascinating insight, and I think you've made it very, very clear indeed why the Indian government and probably the Indian population feels hard done by about what's happened with sanctions over the last few years. But so let's then focus in on these Russian imports. How fast have imports of Russian crude oil to India been going up since February this year? And, you know, is that Russian oil displacing other suppliers to India? And if so, who?
It's actually quite astonishing how fast the imports have risen. In 2021, there had been average Russian imports to India of about 33,000 barrels a day. And they were not consistent, they were sporadic. In January and February 2022, there were no imports from Russia in those 2 months. Obviously, as we've said several times, it's not geographically well located. But in March 2022, seaborne imports by India from Russia suddenly averaged about 300,000 barrels per day after nothing in the previous 2 months. Then the following month, in April, they jumped to 700,000 barrels per day. In May, they rose further to 833,000. And in June, they reached their peak of just over 900,000 barrels per day. So Russia is sending Urals crude, which is a medium sour crude and is similar in quality to Iraqi Basra medium. That is India's most predominant import from Iraq, which is its largest supplier today. Most of India's refineries are calibrated for processing Iraqi Basra, so Urals crude is similar, and that's convenient. The commodity trading literature, by the way, notes that China and India have raised their purchases of heavily discounted seaborne Urals crude by 30% and 20% respectively since the start of this year. Iraqi Basra suppliers are feeling the pressure, and they've raised their prices only by 50 US cents. Whereas other Middle East oil suppliers are raising theirs by around $2. But the primary supplier being displaced is the US, which was in fourth or fifth place among India's suppliers and made mainly spot market sales to India. Saudi Arabia, which had been at the forefront of overseeing OPEC's production cutbacks in order to support firmer prices in 2021, has also seen its sales to India decline in 2022.
Okay, that's really interesting. And as you say, an extraordinary growth in Russian imports to India, and interesting to hear which crudes are being displaced as well. But do you think this Russian export expansion is likely to continue? And if not, why not?
Actually, I don't think that imports from Russia are likely to continue at the same blistering pace in July, August, and September. Commodity trader newsletters that track shipping are already talking about a tapering off in the number of barrels loaded for Indian destinations in the first 15 days of July 2022 compared to the first 15 days of June 2022. In my view, this temporary decrease in oil demand is a seasonal event related to the Indian monsoon rains. First, the heat wave is not as intense as it was pre-monsoon, so the additional cooling demand fueled by the diesel has receded. Peak power demand and use of diesel generators have also come down. Second, the routine economic activities all tend to scale down considerably during the 3 months of heavy rains. These include things such as mining, some agriculture, and the related transport fuel needs for tractors and so on. Scaling back also happens in construction projects as well as some flexible long-distance trucking demands. So these cutbacks all reduce fuel demand. So while fuel demand is still higher than ever in India, it'll not be rising at previous rates during this seasonal lull. But it is possible, though, that India's demand for discounted Russian crude oil will pick up again in Q4 of 2022. There's one thing that could make that not happen. And that is because I've seen published reports, including in The Economist magazine, which also note that some of the European countries that have stated their intention to phase out Russian oil imports by the end of 2022 have in fact sharply increased the volumes they're purchasing now for stockpiling. This has reduced the number of homeless seaborne Russian barrels. It's also reduced the size of the discounts that were on offer just a few months ago, from $30 to $40 to just $7 to $8. Without those steep discounts, it's hard to predict whether Russian crude will still make sense for price-sensitive Indian importers.
Okay, that's really interesting, and particularly the comments about European countries buying and reducing the amount of homeless barrels on the market. But let's just go back to the kind of the increase that we've seen, the dramatic increase we've seen in imports of Russian oil. How did things move so fast between the two countries? How did India go from importing such a sort of small, negligible amount of crude oil from Russia in all of 2021, nothing in the start of 2022, to suddenly importing 300,000 and then up to nearly a million barrels after just 3 months? What's the background? Was there some political sort of background to this?
It's really interesting. I personally think that two previously scheduled routine meetings unwittingly probably had a lot to do with it. In September 2021, there was a regularly scheduled meeting of the BRICS countries hosted by India. You might be aware that BRICS, that's the B-R-I-C-S, was started in June 2009 and is the acronym of a grouping of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. These are all members of the G20 with a combined GDP of over $20 trillion and represent 43% of the world's population. So BRICS, amongst its many initiatives, also has an energy task force to support energy collaboration amongst all its members. Russia is an anchor partner, and there are both bilateral and multilateral new initiatives being formulated by BRICS members with Russia and also amongst each other on energy collaboration in all forms. That's renewables, nuclear, oil and gas, coal, hydro, etc. So in September, they all focused on energy partnerships with Russia at this BRICS meeting that was held in India. And just a few weeks after the September BRICS meeting in India, there was another meeting in India between heads of state, Mr. Putin and Mr. Modi, for the 21st annual Russia-India summit at the start of December. There's a long communique available online on the website of the Indian Ministry of External Affairs listing all the resolutions adopted at this summit meeting. But one of those that's particularly important in hindsight is a stated aspirational joint intention to ship up to 15 million barrels of crude oil from Russia to India during calendar year 2022. I think this must have also been motivated by India trying to diversify its sources and not be totally reliant on OPEC, which was raising prices at will. Of course, in practice and under the circumstances, Russia has already actually shipped more than 60 million barrels in just the first 6 months of calendar year 2022. So it's exceeded the 15 million barrel goal by four times, and that too in just half a year. But coming back to your question of how they pulled it off so fast, the December 2021 heads of state meeting most likely led to intense efforts to set things up in both countries during January and February of 2022. These efforts were for working out commercial term sheets and so on for the 15 million barrels aspirational goal that had been recorded the previous month in December, and which probably looked far-fetched at the time. So 2 months later, right after February, the contracts were ready, and these were then immediately put into action when the homeless barrels and the discounts appeared. That's what I think.
Okay, that's really interesting. Look, as we come to the end of this podcast and wrap up, I think it's also interesting to talk to our listeners about some of the other long-standing energy ties between Russia and India, not only the Russian investments in India that you've mentioned, but also Indian investments in the Russian upstream. So just as we wrap up, can you kind of give us an overview of that long-standing relationship?
Sure. Let me just say one more thing about the Russian investment in the Indian refinery, because that sort of speaks to the ups and downs that both countries have weathered together. You might recall that when we were talking about the Russian integrated energy company Rosneft being one of the owners of the Indian private refinery Nayara since 2017, part of the return on investment calculations on that were related to an old $6 billion loan that Rosneft had with the Venezuelan national oil company PDVSA. Part of the plan was that Venezuelan oil shipments delivered to Nayara would count towards repayment of that loan to Rosneft. Rosneft was going to refine the Venezuelan crude at its refinery in Gujarat, India, and ship the finished products to various markets. Of course, when Venezuelan crude was no longer allowed to be unloaded in India just 2 years later, this had a big negative impact on Rosneft, which is still India's largest foreign investor. That's just an illustration of one out of many ups and downs on the relationship front that this, what I call energy couple, Russia and India, have been through. So to sum it up, you know, there was no appetite to go along, as we've said, with the request to sever ties with Russia. And I should also say that Russia is a beneficiary of three large Indian investments. OVL, which is the foreign investment arm of India's national oil and gas company, OVL is an equity investor in three upstream Russian oil and gas projects in Russia's Far East. And these investments started as far back as the year 2000. India's three Siberian investments are Sakhalin 1, Vankorneft, and in the area of Tomsk. So OVL, the Indian government-owned company, has been invested in Russia for over two decades. And we've already noted that Rosneft is an owner of Nayara, and there are many other energy collaborations in the works. Not only that, India is now looking at the possibility of buying the stakes of currently departing international oil majors in Russia. ExxonMobil, as you might have heard, is abandoning its 30% stake in the Sakhalin 1 project, where India's OVL is a co-investor with a 20% stake. OVL has already proposed highly specialized technical personnel to take over operations of the project because ExxonMobil, as the project operator, has announced the impending departure of its skilled technical manpower. So if OVL experts can take over, then the project remains operational and viable. Another one that India is looking at, British Petroleum has a 19.75% stake in Rosneft that it's abandoning. And Shell has a stake in the Sakhalin 2 project where India is not yet invested. But India is looking at the pros and cons of all these opportunities at the moment. So to sum it all up, India is never going to absorb the full extent of the crude oil that Russia used to send to Europe. But therefore, allegations that India's funding is responsible for funding the war effort in Ukraine are taken with a grain of salt in India and are even seen as hypocritical. It's evident that except for Germany and the countries that Russia itself has decided to cut energy supplies to, all other European countries are continuing to buy fossil fuels, including oil and gas from Russia. And they're introducing exceptions and waivers in a way that India was never able to do when it was suddenly prevented on various occasions from continuing its own trading arrangements with Russia. I see Russia and India as a 20-year having a 20-year marriage, as I mentioned, in the energy sector. And that's where things stand right now. So India's response is friendly, but firm on its position to look out for its energy security with no regrets.
Okay, Mihir, that's been fascinating. Thank you so much. And you've made very clear what India's position is and the details behind it, which I think is incredibly useful thing to do and explains a lot behind both the government and company strategies around the available Russian crude at such huge discounts. So, look, thanks very much indeed for your time. You can find more of Mihir's research on India on our website. So please do go and look there. But in the meantime, thank you very much indeed for listening. Please all stay healthy and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.